ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Once upon a time, journalists were trusted to hold those in power to account.
Deep Throat urged Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein to follow the money.
But now trust in mainstream media is disappearing, paving the way for conspiracy.
Pizzagate is real.
The satanic temple of Jeffrey Epstein.
I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we dive deep into the stories and dispel the rumours. New episodes on ABC Listen every Tuesday and Thursday.
It's a case that's captivated America and grabbed headlines around the world.
The elderly mother of Savannah Guthrie, one of the United States' most high-profile television journalists, remains missing.
We still have hope, and I wanted to say to whoever has her, it is never too late to do the right thing. It's never too late.
The disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, the mother of an NBC Today Show host, Savannah Guthrie, is one of the most extraordinary in America's history.
The fame of Savannah and the age of her mom, the attention that this case has gotten on an international level have been really extraordinary. The number of leads that have come in, the leads are in the thousands. I mean, that's almost unbelievable. The advances in technology that have been used as part of the investigations, all of these things, to me, have set this case apart.
Today, we speak to former FBI profiler, Mary Ellen O'Toole, who spent her career studying the criminal mind. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Mary Ellen, you are retired, of course, from the FBI now. But just before we launch into the details of the case of Nancy Guthrie, just tell me about the high-profile cases that you worked on.
So some of the cases that are high-profile that I worked on over the years would include the Unabomber case, the Natalie Holloway case, the Zodiac case in San Francisco, Polyclass kidnapping case, multiple kidnapping cases. So those are just a few of the ones that I've worked.
So you are, Mary Ellen, the perfect person to talk to about this case.
At 1:47 in the morning, Nancy's doorbell camera was disconnected and removed. 45 minutes later, the app on her pacemaker was disconnected from her phone.
Investigators found signs of forced entry at her house. A security camera had been removed and splatters of blood were found, which DNA confirms matched the 84-year-old.
The first major breakthrough came when footage showed a masked man tampering with a security camera on her front door, leading to thousands of public tips.
So, Mary Ellen, Nancy Guthrie was last seen on the 31st of January. And on February the 1st, she was reported missing. Now, 2 days later, a ransom note arrives. Just tell me about that, because it went to a TV outlet, didn't it? Not directly to the Guthries. Is that a usual thing to occur?
Well, first of all, kidnappings really, even here in the United States, are not something that we would see all that often. Mm-hmm. But for something like this, where a note is submitted by, allegedly by the kidnappers, and then it goes to a third party entity, which in this case was TMZ, is not typical.
We received an email at TMZ from somebody purporting to basically issue a ransom demand. They are asking for money, a lot. They are asking for it in the form of Bitcoin, and they are putting an or else on this.
That is pretty unusual, at least in my experience, to see that happen.
All right. Well, then on February the 4th, Savannah and her siblings, Annie and Cameron, issue a video plea for their mother's safe return.
Our mom is a kind, faithful, loyal, fiercely loving woman of goodness and light.
Mama, if you're listening, we need you to come home. We miss you.
Now, tell me, would police have advised them to do that?
I think the police would have had a role in encouraging them to do that. And the reason that they would is to establish communication, hopefully with the kidnapper, but if not with that person who took their mom, with someone close to the kidnapper that would be able to recognize the kidnapper's behavior. Maybe the kidnapper had talked about the kidnapping before as they were preparing for the kidnapping. And they want that mother, that wife, that relative, next door neighbor to come forward with information.
We too have heard the reports about a ransom letter in the media. As a family, we are doing everything that we can. We are ready to talk.
Well, Mary Ellen, a few days later, on the 10th of February, a surveillance video is released. Just tell me about that video and how significant it was.
Well, the video is extremely significant. First of all, it was retrieved from a disabled door camera, which a lot of people did not think would be retrievable. So it produced actually some very clear video. It shows the individual, one person, who is dressed with a mask on and wearing the infamous gloves that we're hearing so much about now, walking onto the porch and looking at the camera and picking up a plant, apparently rubbing it maybe against the camera. But it shows this person on the camera for, you know, a pretty good amount of time. And what's so interesting to me is that you have the offender coming across as not being overly nervous or jittery or uncertain or even angry or even inebriated or possibly on drugs. You see him moving slowly. You see almost a confidence about this person, which is very telling to a profiler in terms of the mindset and the personality of this person.
So this is pretty useful vision then at this point for the FBI and for police.
It's very useful. Yes, it's very useful in terms of the comfort level with which this offender seems to have had. And the only way you can have that kind of comfort level is planning ahead. And that planning could have included going to the house before the night of the abduction.
Of course, there's been some speculation if it was a robbery gone wrong. I mean, can we tell anything about that from that vision?
Yeah, I've heard that on a number of cases over the years. And a robbery gone wrong would suggest something that I have never seen in my career. Not that that makes it impossible, but a robbery or a burglary is described as taking property that belongs to another person. And most burglaries, at least those here in the United States, occur at a time when the burglar doesn't think somebody will be at home, because what their intent is to go in, take things of value, and then to leave. But if you go into somebody's home at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you're pretty guaranteed you're going to run into somebody. And burglars don't want to do that. So if you're a burglar and you go into somebody's home and now you're confronted with the person that lives there, now it requires that you morph in to this violent kidnapper, because burglary and kidnapping are very different crimes. And so when I hear people say that this was a burglary that has gone wrong, this does not have the elements of that kind of crime whatsoever, at least to me.
All right. So this is vital vision, retrieved actually by Google from a disabled camera. Now, the FBI also found these gloves that you referred to before, but unfortunately the DNA in those was no match on any database. They're also trying to trace Nancy's pacemaker with signal sniffers. So at this point, they're obviously throwing everything they have at this case.
They are using the most current state-of-the-art technology that they can. It's using things like DNA. That to me is extremely important. We need to draw on every piece of technology that we can, even if it's a long shot at the end. So the pacemaker and being able to possibly track the pacemaker, if it works, it's great. If it doesn't work, at least they tried.
Right. And at this time, you know, the family has posted a number of videos saying it's never too late to return their mother, to do the right thing.
It's been 2 weeks since our mom was taken, and I wanted to say to whoever has her, it is never too late to do the right thing. And we are here.
They have, haven't they, been cleared by police. Chris Nanos is the sheriff in charge, and he says they have been completely gracious victims.
We really put them through the ringer. We not just interview them. We take their cars. We take their houses. We take their phones, all this stuff. They have been 100% cooperative with us. They
are. Yes. When you work a kidnapping case, and we learned this the hard way, especially with child kidnapping cases, you always, always have to clear the immediate family. And you have to do that as soon as you can to rule out people that are closest to the victim.
Let's consider, Mary Ellen, whether this huge amount of attention and these thousands of leads given to police are a help or actually a hindrance. Because surely the sheer number of tips that the FBI has received would take a massive amount of resources to analyze.
It can. You're right. It absolutely can. But the FBI is really used to going into what we call a command center, which is where all the officers of the investigation are. And this is where all the leads would be coming in there or to other field offices around the country. And they have a lot of experience in being able to go through these leads and being able to rule out leads that may be generated by somebody's opinion about the case. And then they can prioritize leads as well. And leads have to be actionable. We have field offices all over, including in Australia. And so we can handle leads internationally, and we can do that pretty quickly.
Mary Ellen, let's look then at what comes next. The FBI would be under huge pressure to solve this case. What sort of job do you think they're doing? Because I suppose there will be criticism that it's too slow, that a resolution is too slow.
Unfortunately, it's not like TV where a case is resolved in, 45 minutes on television or in a movie. So it does take much longer to be able to bring resources to the case and analyze the forensic evidence and get a resolution. And I think what's important is this offender, this kidnapper, if he's still alive, and you always have to consider that possibility, mm-hmm. this offender more than likely doesn't want to be caught. And if the more planning an offender puts into a crime ahead of time, the more they've put into their post-offense behavior. That means their behavior after the crime. And when a crime is not spontaneous, where a person decides in 10 minutes, I'm going to rob a bank, when a crime has some planning to it, and sometimes a lot of planning to it, that can really make it challenging. But I think in this case, this offender, he is no competition for the forensics that are probably being collected and analyzed as we speak. And that includes the DNA evidence.
As you say, it's clear a lot of planning went into this. From all you've learned as a former FBI profiler, what attributes would you be expecting in a perpetrator in a case like this?
One of the tenets that we learn in the FBI's behavioral analysis unit or the profiling unit is the perpetrator or the offender brings their personality with them to the crime scene. So you don't switch personalities just because you're committing a violent crime. So when we see what your personality traits are as they're exhibited during the crime, then we're able to tell the investigators, this is the kind of person that you are looking for in their normal everyday life. And I'll just give you an example here. Mm-hmm. If this person appeared to be relaxed, comfortable as he was on Nancy's porch, knowing that within minutes he was going to commit a very violent crime, this is somebody who doesn't get stressed out in high-risk situations. This is probably also someone who had very low empathy for Nancy and probably viewed her more as an object This person probably also has a sense of grandiosity because this crime has a certain flair of grandiosity to it. When I start to see those kinds of traits, you're starting to put together the profile of somebody that displays traits of a personality disorder that we know as psychopathy. It's not a mental illness. People just don't care about others, and you see people with these traits responsible for a larger percentage of violent crimes.
Interesting. And the motive, is it just money?
I have never seen a crime, especially one that is complex, where there is a single motive. But in this case, it certainly could be money. Sex is always considered in a kidnapping crime, although here I think it's less so based on the age of the victim. The motives could include something like wanting to commit a crime where you get a lot of attention. And another motive can be actually a sense of revenge. And these are people that blame others for how badly screwed up their life is.
All right. Well, Mary Ellen, as the days roll on, what are the chances, in your view, that Nancy will be found alive?
I know what the investigators, the agents, and the sheriff's deputies are feeling, and that is that they are motivated to find her and bring her home alive. And you can't rule that out. I've had cases where the victims were missing for a year, and they were returned home alive. So you always operate from that perspective. It's difficult because you know what the reality is. She's 84 and in frail health, but it's not impossible that that could happen.
Mary Ellen O'Toole is a former FBI profiler and currently director of the Forensic Science Program at George Mason University. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.